Stephen Heller mentioned Mao Zedong's great skill as a calligrapher, and it turns out that this man, otherwise responsible for mass death and misery, had a rich creative life beyond calligraphy. As Sarah Campbell tells us, Mao loved writing poetry, too.
Not surprisingly, many of Mao's poems are war poems. Some of them were written during years when he lived out of a cave. They're about the military struggles of his early career, like the Red Army's 6,000-mile Long March of 1934. So can we learn about Chinese history from Mao's poetry?
Well, if you want to know the history of the 20th century and the wars, it certainly is helpful.
That's Mao scholar and translator Willis Barnstone.
But I think what the poems show more than anything else is not only their very, very frequent beauty and use of language in an extremely concise, typically Chinese, concise and evocative way.
Okay, so Mao wrote beautiful poetry? Let's listen to one of his poems. It's a nature poem. He wrote a lot of those too.
风雨送春归, 飞雪迎春到, 已是悬崖百丈冰, 犹有花枝俏。 Spring disappears with rain and wind and comes with flying snow. Ice hangs on 1,000 feet of cliff, yet at the tip of the topmost branch, the plum blooms. The plum is not a delicious girl showing off, yet she heralds spring. When mountain flowers are in wild bloom, she giggles in awe of the color.
To me, those images don't seem so extraordinary.
That's Rachel Aviv. She wrote recently about Mao's poetry in relationship to his politics.
I'm not sure that his poetry stands alone. I think it's impressive technically, but it doesn't strike me as particularly original.
For Aviv, what's remarkable is not the fact that Mao mastered conventional Chinese verse, but the fact that his own poetry does not sound like the type of Marxist writing he called for.
In the Yenin talks, his talks about literature and art in 1949, he wrote that we must fit art and literature properly.
We must fit art and literature properly into the whole revolutionary machine. Art should be a powerful weapon for uniting and educating the people and for attacking and annihilating the enemy.
To have a poem about plum blossoms, it seems sort of absurd to put that in the context of a poem being a powerful weapon for revolution.
Mao's poems, as you heard, are often modeled after classical Chinese nature poetry. His language is refined, and the poems are loaded with mythical allusions. But he wanted everyone else in China to write in common speech and to avoid the old forms. He said the old style would cramp their thought. He even at one point told younger writers not to use his poetry as a model.
Mao permitted this formal kind of poetry with references to traditional poetry only to himself during his main years. He said he was too old in a kind of uncertain modesty to write in any other way. However, other people could not do this. They had to do a kind of unfriendly social realism. It's almost a kind of madness.
This madness produced a lot of poetry. During the Great Leap Forward in the late 50s, China decided that poems could be mass-produced the same way other national goods were. So, to boost literary production, poem collectors were dispatched into factories and farms. They were supposed to gather poems and songs from the workers while they worked the machines. The results? Well, here's an example.
Each year our farm production grows. Grains and cotton pile up mountain high. Hurrah! Eat the grains, but don't forget the sower. The Communist Party is our dear Ma and Pa.
On the one hand, this Great Leap Forward approach to poetry was a success. More poems were definitely getting churned out, but most of what was written lacked, shall we say, substance. In that sense, making tons of poems failed in the same way that the efforts to produce tons of steel and grain failed. In the years that followed, the Chinese people suffered what may be the largest famine in human history.
He presented his ideas about art with such force and rage that to see him then create a piece of art that looks sort of romantic and sensual and conventional, it makes it seem like a much greater contradiction.
Ultimately, Mao will not be remembered for his images of plum blossoms, but for the way his policies ended up attacking and annihilating not just the enemy, but his own people.
That's Sarah Campbell. A version of this story was first produced for the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast.